All right, so we'll be briskly moving through the end of lesson number 9. We'll start in 2 Samuel 1 and then move into lesson 10 and hopefully finish lesson 10, which is just the second half of 2 Samuel 5 and chapter 6. So we left off in class, Saul having died, his three sons having died in battle. David's found out the news. And now here, starting in verse 17, it talks about, then David chanted the lament over Saul and Jonathan, his son. Now, here he's got this dirge for them, this sad song he wrote. But I just want to ask the question, was Jonathan's relationship, based on this context, anything more than a friendship with David? That's a weirdly worded question. So answer it how you understood the question to be. He loved him as a brother. So that was kind of the answer I was looking for. Though the way it's been worded and the way we've talked about it, it wasn't more of a romantic relationship. He was a brother to him. You know, he says, I'm distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. You have been very pleasant to me. You love me as your love to me was more wonderful than the love of women. And, you know, you can see the expression of love to Jonathan that he had and the impact that, you know, we can look back and know the impact that Jonathan had on David's life. We looked and see how Jonathan was there for him from the time that he left his father's household, and he had a confidant. He had someone who was constantly sticking with him, who was a righteous man, who was always there to support him, even in times of David's trouble, David's peril, when Saul was after him. Now, that being said, I wouldn't put a lot of stock in the love that David had for a wife or women, because he tends to like a lot of them, and that'll be a question we just ask in a second. But it's emphasizing the relationship that Jonathan had with David. Now, we move into 2 Samuel chapter 2, and I'm just going to read a few verses. These are kind of the highlights of 2 Samuel 2, and that's the idea that David is now becoming king. So in 2:1 it said, and then it came about afterwards that David inquired of the Lord, saying, shall I go up to one of the cities of Judah? And the Lord said to him, go up. So David said, where shall I go up? And he said, to Hebron. So David went there, and his two wives, Ahinoam, that's the way my Bible pronounced it, the Jezreelite, and Abigail, the widow of Nabal, the Carmelite. And David brought up his men who were with him, each with his household, and they lived in the cities of Hebron. So this is where David is now going to reign. Down in verse 8 it says, but Abner, the son of Ner, the commander of Saul's army, has taken Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, and brought him over to Mahanaim. Verse 10, Ishbosheth, Saul's son, was 40 years old when he became king over Israel, and he was king for 2 years. The house of Judah, however, followed David. The time that David was king in Hebron over the house of Judah was 7 years and 6 months. That's kind of what I wanted to get out of that context. Is here's David has become, he's anointed king, but he has become king over Judah. And Ishbosheth was put in place of Saul as king over Israel. It was pointed out that it's interesting, we talk about this being the United Kingdom, but right currently it's divided. And so that's just an interesting thing. We don't know this 2 years that Ishbosheth reigned. We don't know if this was at the beginning of a period of a civil war or towards the end of that period. There's some fluctuation in time. But he was put in over Israel. And what we see here is moving into this next part and into chapter 3 is that you're going to see this struggle. It kind of begins with Abner, the commander of Saul's army, and Joab, where they have this foolish contest where they're going to have the men stand next to each other and stab each other in the side, and it's a test of wills and strength. And as much as guys are into that, I don't know that I would go that far. But it's, you know, it says in verse 17, the day the battle was very severe, and Abner and the men of Israel who were beaten before the servants of David. And that statement probably is nothing more than the fact that, you know, God is allowing David to prevail. We'll see that in chapter 3, verse 1. But I want to point out this context for what's going to happen a little bit later. Verse 19, it says, Ashul pursued Abner. This is Joab's brother. And he did not turn to the right or to the left from following Abner. Abner told him in verse 21, turn to the right or the left, but don't follow me. And he told him again in verse 22. But Ashul refused. And so It says, therefore, in verse 23, Abner struck him in the belly with the butt end of a spear, so that the spear came out his back, and he fell there and died on the spot. And it came about that all who came to the place where Ashul had fallen and died stood still. So Abner continues to flee. Joab continues to chase Abner. Here you got the two commanders of the two different armies. And eventually Joab relents and allows Abner to escape. But the grander context is it moving into chapter 3, verse 1. It says, now there was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David. And David grew steadily stronger, but the house of Saul grew continually weaker. I'm coming to this. The last part of this section that I put on here, I asked a question. We won't spend a lot of time on it, but I said, why was David allowed so many wives? So we see in 2 through 5, it lists wives and some kids. So my question to you is, why was David allowed so many wives? That's the right answer. Somebody said, I don't know. We don't know. And I point that out to say that David's somebody that we look at as a man of faith, a man of God. He's a man after God's own heart. I don't understand why he was allowed to have so many wives. I don't understand a lot of things. It's just something that is mentioned in here, but we see that. And I can't tell you if God approved of it, God didn't approve of it. I point out that to the fact that just because it's mentioned doesn't mean God was approving of this lifestyle, or if he was just allowing it to happen. It's just brought up he had, in this context, 6 different wives. Moving into 6 through 39. So again, we're talking about Abner being the commander of Saul's army. We have this disagreement, and so I asked the question, why did Abner defect to David? Ish-bosheth?
Yes.
Oh, I gotcha. I'm with you. He was. To what extent? Why was he insulted? Yeah, it didn't even mention. It says here that why have you gone into my father's concubine? Verse 7, and Abner never confirms he did it. In verse 8, it says, then Abner was very angry over the words of Ishbosheth and said, "Am I a dog's head that belongs to Judah? Today I show kindness to the house of Saul your father, to his brothers and to his friends, and have not delivered you into the hands of David. Yet today you charge me with the guilt concerning the woman." Interesting enough, a concubine is a form of prostitute in a sense. There's more to it than that, but that's essentially what it is, an arrangement for certain things for certain things. And Ishbosheth makes this point. His father's gone. But the point is that this accusation causes Abner to do what? He causes Abner to defect to David and tell him that, you know, he was going to turn Israel to David. He says, establish the throne of David over Israel and over Judah from Dan even to Beersheba. So Abner took offense to this. And so he's decided to turn the tide in David's favor, turn the people away from Ishbosheth. And so what was the condition of the covenant that that Abner and David made? He had to bring Michael. Who is Michael? Another of David's wives. Specifically, who is she? It was his first wife, and it was Saul's daughter. And so David makes that a part of the covenant. He said, you need to bring me Michael. Now, from what we know, Abner follows through with this. We can see that Michael's with David later on. But I put in here, were Abner's intentions honorable in the covenant he was making with David? Is his intentions honorable? Is he really trying to take away the kingdom from Ishbosheth and turn the people of Israel to David? Or was there some ulterior motive? That may be the better way to put that.
I thought it was honorable.
Okay. Everybody agree? Disagree? He may have been choosing the winning side, but when it came to doing what he said he was going to do, that's what he tried to do, right, John? He did. He was doing what he said he was going to do. And I bring that up for the fact that when Abner, in verse 20, came to David at Hebron, and David made a feast for Abner, and the men were with him. Joab wasn't there, verse 23. When Joab and all the army that were with him arrived, and they told Joab, saying, Abner the son of Ner came to king, the king, and he had sent him away, and he has gone in peace. And then Joab came to this king and said, what have you done? Behold, Abner came to you. Why then have you sent him away, and he's already gone? You know Abner the son of Ner, that he came to deceive you and to learn of your going out and your coming in to find out all that you're doing. Basically, Abner's not here to be honorable. He's here to spy on you. Is that the case? We have no indication of that. In fact, we know that he didn't because of the way David treated the whole situation. Okay, so Joab, what did Joab say his intentions were when he wanted to go and get, his intentions were telling David that, you know, he was spying on him, but what was the real reason Joab wanted to go and find Abner? He killed his brother. It was revenge. That's all it was. And this, again, as we see this in the grander context, we talk about this only from the standpoint of you see these events happening that is shifting the kingdom out of Ishbosheth's hands, away from Saul's lineage, into David's hands. And this death of Abner, it follows that trend. I asked the question, you can answer it several different ways, but what's the result of Abner's death? Yeah, verse 36 it says, now all the people took note of it, you know, David actually mourning, and it said it pleased them, just as everything the king did pleased all the people. Now, David didn't do this to please the people, but the people were pleased to see that he had remorse and he had sorrow for Abner's death. Ultimately, what this did was it swayed the people to David when there became this power struggle and this void in power when Ishbosheth is murdered in the next chapter, and it allowed the people to anoint or name David their king over Israel as well. We see that transition period. All right, 2 Samuel 4. I got two questions, and then we'll keep moving. So we come across a name in verse 4, Mephibosheth. Who is Mephibosheth? Jonathan's son. He'll become important later on, but I wanted to bring that name up now, put it before you, so that we'll recognize that name as we move further in. Now you got Ishbosheth in chapter 4. Why was Ishbosheth murdered? And then what was David's response? There may be some conjecture to why he was murdered, but what are your thoughts on that? They thought it would please David. Other thoughts or comments? Killed him because he was Saul's son. Kind of go back to what John said, maybe picking the winning side. You know, Ishbosheth is on the way out, and so we're going to do something that would find favor in David's eyes.
I don't know that we can establish for sure, but I have a reading that trying to answer your question. You note in verse 1 that these two guys, you know, were under Abner, and their commander, evidently under Abner, and then Ishbosheth takes the charge.
Well, and that's this is conjecture from the standpoint of why they killed him. We do see what they go and say to David, but that is just as valid of a reason to do away with them. If you do have a military background or you're involved, you do have this sense of respecting authority and your superiors. So it's just interesting because of how David handles the situation. So they decide to go and they kill Ishbosheth, whether it be revenge or whether it be for gain or whether it be for favor. And they come to David, and so what was David's response to this?
He was outraged.
He was outraged. What did he say? I mean, this is to me the interesting part.
He said that he punished a man who came with the tales of Saul's death.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to repay you the same way.
Yeah.
He should have known what happened to those guys, to that guy that came over and
Yeah, the way he refers to Ishbosheth, he says, how much more when wicked men, after having said that he sees the person who killed Saul and put him to death, how much more then when wicked men have killed a righteous man in his own house on his bed, shall I not require his blood from your hand and destroy you from the earth? And so David commanded the young men, and they killed them and cut off their hands and feet and hung them up beside the pool in Hebron. And they took the head of Ishbosheth and buried him in the grave of Abner in Hebron. David was an honorable man. We can see this as we go on and on. Something else to point out as we setting up for a couple classes down the road, though. We continue to see throughout David's tutelage under Saul and moving into being a king, we see a lot of bloodshed, too. You see David going out and fighting wars. We see regime change. We see bloodshed, 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 fight enemies, that sort of thing. And David is an honorable man. He's a man of faith. He's a great leader, but you see a lot of that bloodshed in, I wouldn't say power struggle, God's with David, so David is prevailing, but you see a lot of that death around him. So moving into the first part of 2 Samuel 5 to end off this lesson, I asked, how old was David when he became king? He says he was 30 years old. He said he reigned 40 years, seven years and 6 months in Jerusalem, and he reigned 33 years over Israel and Judah in Jerusalem. I'm sorry, what did I say? Jerusalem. Oh, sorry, I meant Jerusalem on the second. You're right. See, y'all got to keep me honest. So, 7 years and 6 months in Hebron, and Jerusalem he reigned for 33 years. It changed in my Bible. I don't. All right, let's go over to lesson number 10. So we're just covering a chapter and a half, and I've got 25 minutes to do that. Cross your fingers, we might get it all done. So, do me a favor. Let's see. No, we'll stay here. We'll go over to 1 Chronicles when we get down to 2 Samuel 6 as well. We'll be maybe flipping back and forth because here's where things get interesting from the study standpoint and where we can gain more information. So as David's reign begins, you're going to start seeing that David's reign is recorded not only in 2 Samuel and beginning of Kings, but you're going to see it's also recorded in Chronicles, 1 Chronicles. And so you may gain information in 1 Chronicles that you don't necessarily have in 2 Samuel. And it may be just a little tidbit here or there, but it is important as you study to look back and forth because you can gain a little bit more about stories or information. So we'll see that in this lesson. So it says in chapter 5, verse 17, when the Philistines heard that they had anointed David king over Israel, all the Philistines went up to seek out David. And when David heard of it, he went down to the stronghold. Now the Philistines came and spread themselves out in the valley of Rimphah. Now, I asked a question, give some reasons why the Philistines would seek out and attack David.
Revenge for past defeats.
Okay, revenge for past defeats, that's a good one.
They didn't like it when he came and lived in their land when he was running from Saul.
Yeah, and that's the, Matt had mentioned politics, you know, this is the where he may have had favor with Achish. Something like that. But he had favor, but there were a lot who didn't like him. What else? So maybe exalting the Goliath, you know, the Goliath killer, you know, the Philistine killer. What else? And so I kind of, that's, I'm going to grasp at that for a second because I think that, to me, there's a part of this as well where God comes into play. So, you know, contempt of David for the things that he'd done. I mean, he's a great warrior. He's been with the Philistines, but he has been a slayer of the Philistines. You can see the contempt of some of the Philistines against him. Maybe because the nation's weak after this infighting amongst Saul and David and their camps. Being a new king, you want to test him. Maybe they're just hard-headed and rebellious. And this is really where I think about, you know, David defeating Goliath, and then you know, the contempt that they would have and the suspicion that you see that Saul had of David and you see the Philistines have of David. And you can see that through the study we've done with Saul and then 1 Samuel 21 and 29, where you see these Philistines aren't really okay with Saul, with David being there. But maybe because of their contempt for David, they came up against him, or maybe because God continued to humble them when they'd and then when they defeated Saul, they became dismissive of God. You know, to me, there's this God component. Rocky mentioned that David made them burn their idols. We see back in 1 Samuel 4 that they knew who God was. We see that they were scared when the ark came to the camp. Now, they prevailed at that time, and that'll be a little bit more. I'll reference that for a second when we talk about moving the ark. But you see that the Philistines knew who God was. You see that there was some reverence for him, though it wasn't theirs. And then when 1 Samuel 4, 5, and 6, you see that when the ark was with the Philistines for that 7 months, you saw that Dagon, their god, that God humbled them through Dagon. The idol fell, it broke, cut off his hands, I think cut off his head. But as Saul has been during his reign, God wasn't with him. And Saul suffered defeats at the Philistines. He continued to war, he did win, he did lose, but you see that it's not with God's blessing. You see that the Philistines get more brazen, more brave. You see that the Philistines killed Saul. And to me, there's this God component. Maybe they attack David because they have no more reverence for, not only they don't like David and the contempt, but they have no fear of God anymore. And I bring that up because, I'll ask this question. What did David do before each of the battles? He inquired of God. And who was attributed with the victory? God was. Now, like Rocky said, and I'm going to flip over to 1 Chronicles 14. Rocky mentioned that their idols, 1 Chronicles 14, verse 12. So, verse 11, it says, they came up to Baal-perazim, and David defeated them there. And David said, God has broken through my enemies by my hand, like the breakthrough of the waters. Therefore, they named the place Baal-perazim, and they abandoned their gods there. So David gave the order, and they were burned with fire. God humbling the Philistines. Maybe they came up to David because they had no more reverence for God. They were humbled in the sight of this Lord God Almighty, and they had this contempt for David. We go on to see that in verse 17 of 1 Chronicles 14, and you don't find this in 2 Samuel 6, it says, then the fame of David went out into all the land, and the Lord brought the fear of him on all nations. You know, it says in verse 16, David did just as God commanded him, and they were struck down. This is the army of the Philistines from Gibeon, even as far as Gezer. Saul had not been having this type of success against this Philistines, this warring nation. And David did, and that's because of God. And then this fame of David continued to grow. But it's the fame of David because of who? And David made this known. It's because of God. God is exalted in the battles that David wins. God is exalted and known through David's battles, especially by the way that he won these battles, where he attacked him first and then came around behind the second time. And it said that God will have gone out before you to strike the army of the Philistines. He would have humbled them. And so, conjecture to an extent, but that to me is a component of this. That's maybe that they attacked because of their loss of respect or humility for the Almighty, and the Almighty is humbling him along with exalting David amongst these nations, and in doing so, allowing other nations to know who this Lord God is. Moving into chapter 6. So, in chapter 2 Samuel 6, but I'm going to ask you to turn over to 1 Chronicles. I think the story is better in 1 Chronicles. We get a little bit more information. So, 1 Chronicles 13 and 1 Chronicles 15. So this story is that David wants to bring the ark, bring it with him, bring it to him in Jerusalem where he's reigning. Now the ark has been at the edge of the nation since before the time of Saul, since the time of Samuel, since the time Samuel was a judge. The Philistines had taken the ark, they returned it back to the edge of the nation, and it had been residing at a place called, well, there's two different names for it, Kiriath Jearim, or it was also called Baal something. It's in 1 Samuel 6. But the point is that it's been residing away from the capital. It's been residing at the edge of the nation for roughly 67 and a half years, plus or minus. It was 20 years in 1 Samuel 7, 2, it was 20 years in one location, and then it was 40 years at that same location during Saul's reign. It was there for the 7.5 years of David's reign in this Kiriath Jearim. And so verse 2 of 1 Chronicles 13, it says, David said to all the assembly of Israel, if it seems good to you, and if it is from the Lord our God, let us send everywhere to our kinsmen who will remain in all the land of Israel, also to the priests and Levites who were with them in the cities with pastured lands, and they may meet with us, and let us bring back the ark of our God to us, for we did not seek it in the days of Saul. So David's wanting to bring this holy item, the holy items, back to where he's reigning in Jerusalem. And he's doing it, well, I'll ask this question, was David doing something good by bringing the Ark of God to Jerusalem?
He had good intentions.
Is there any indication that, I mean, with he had good intentions, is there any indication that God was opposed to this idea? I still don't know that God was there was never a problem per se with them taking it back to Jerusalem. Maybe we'll get to that in a second. But David was sincere in what he was doing. Was he doing something good? Yes, I think he was trying to bring the Ark of the Covenant back to Jerusalem where he's reigning, where he's establishing this nation that has been provided and made able by God. Where did David and all Israel... Were David and all Israel sincere in their worship and praise of God during this journey? They were, and where would you point to show that?
Verse 8.
Okay. Yeah, David and all Israel were celebrating before God. Why was their worship and praise half-hearted? I would say so, yes. In this context, I would say yes. Was celebrating worship. We got to put back somewhere. I'll come back to that in a second. I'm looking at my notes, but I'll come back to that in a second. All right, so there, what I would suggest is doing a good thing or doing something that God approves of by bringing the ark back to Jerusalem. All right, they're praising God. They're singing praises to his name, which I would suggest is worship when we do the same thing. We sing praises under our God. They're celebrating his name. We can do that in song. We can do that in praise. I may have to get with you after class. I got a verse for that, but my brain's not working. The coffee only goes so far. And we could talk about it afterward. Are they doing it half-heartedly? No, they're not doing it half-heartedly. But I got a point to this, okay? So we can do something with good intention. We can do something with all our might. We can do something. We can strive to worship the Lord, but if we don't do it in the way that God intends for us to do it, is he going to be happy? No. I see everybody going, or it should be an emphatic no. We can see that. We can gain that from this context. So why did the anger of the Lord burn against Uzzah, and why did he strike him down? Well, and so I would suggest that's it. It says here in 2, if it's from the Lord our God, and there was no opposition to that, there's nothing mentioned that God was opposed to them moving it, I don't know that they had to inquire of the Lord to move the ark unless they didn't know what they were doing when they moved it, which is, I think, what your point is, correct?
Why would they not know? Because they
we go back to this idea, and you think about the tutelage they've been under, Saul, and David's a godly man. We go back to, again, I got a verse for that. You go back to Deuteronomy 11. Go to Deuteronomy 11:1, and here's why. I can point to a specific verse as to why they got themselves into trouble. Deuteronomy 11:1 says, "You shall therefore love the Lord your God and always keep his charge, his statutes, his ordinances, his commandments." How long did... Two classes over. Statutes, ordinances, and commandments. They had forgotten. They hadn't been doing what they were supposed to. Keeping... And we see that in chapter 15 of First Chronicles. We did not seek him according to his ordinances. Not necessarily that we didn't inquire of him before we moved it. It's that we did not seek him according to the ordinance. Where does it say that God was opposed to this? They asked if... where does it say... Did God judge anybody but Uzzah for doing something wrong? I agree. I think the point we're discussing is the fact that God wasn't okay with them moving it, period. I don't think it had anything to do with them moving it, period. Where would you find that in the text? Because in verse 2 it says, if it is from the Lord our God, and God is speaking to David.
Where does it say God was speaking to David?
It says that back in 1 Samuel 18:19, when the Spirit of the Lord came upon David, and it was taken from Saul. It was in 1 Samuel 28 where Saul talks about when the Spirit of the Lord was taken from him, and you know, God no longer talks to him. The Spirit of the Lord is it with David. David inquires of the Lord tells him. So we can see those things. So in here it says, if it is from the Lord our God, let us send everywhere. The Lord didn't stop him. And there's no indication that the Lord was opposed to this. What was the Lord opposed to? What does David indicate in chapter 15? David indicates that it was because they didn't inquire of the Lord and his ordinances how to move the ark specifically. And that's verse 15, the sons of the Levites carried the ark of God in their shoulders with their poles therein, as Moses had commanded, according to the word of the Lord. I don't want to, and this may be so we can keep moving, I don't want to extend it to God was not okay with the moving that ark at all, because I believe that in making this statement,
I don't want to say what.
But you're saying that they didn't inquire of the Lord, correct?
Yes.
I'm thinking in verse 2, that if it is from the Lord our God, is an indication that if it's of God's will, we can do this.
And that, in verse 4, at the end it said, for the thing was right in the eyes of all the people, and God, it's just all the people.
But is there any indication God was judging them for anything other than moving it based on, through a cart?
God used us as an example.
Yes, sir. Okay, so he did not seek him according to the ordinances. Not about inquiring if they should move it, but how they should move it. And so I'll leave it there for now because I'm trying to get through the lesson. I'm more than happy to discuss this afterward. It's not a dismissal of things. It's a matter of we're never going to finish otherwise. But I appreciate the discussion on this. I think that it's important for us to understand. The point I'm trying to make is that if we don't do, if we can do things with good intention, we can do things in a way that's full-hearted, we can do things with an intention of worshiping God, but if we don't do it in the way that he wants us to, then is that an excuse? Is that pleasing to God? And no, we can see that here. We see that because they didn't move the ark the way they were supposed to, Uzzah was struck down. And you think about because he touched it. He touched it because it was in the cart. It was moving. We wouldn't have that problem had it not been moved in a cart, if it had been carried by poles. And you think about, and I'm going to apply this today too, you think about the emotional roller coaster that David goes through. What were the emotions that David experienced?
First he was angry.
Okay, and then he was
afraid.
Then he was afraid. David was sincere in what he was doing. Did that make it any less wrong in the sense of how they were moving the ark? No. So just because we're ignorant of something doesn't mean we're not wrong. Just because it doesn't mean it's not sinning. Bring that full circle. We can try to justify partaking once a year on Christmas or on Easter. We can try to justify instrumental music. We can try to justify anything that is of good intent, of our wholehearted affection towards God, our love for Him, our devotion to Him. But if it's not of God's ordinances or commandments, is it right? Is it pleasing to God? It's not. So I think about a couple of verses. I think about Saul first. I think over in 1 Samuel 15. We see this idea of doing what we want to do in the guise of pleasing God and God not being pleased. So in 1 Samuel 15, we talked about this. God told him to go and to destroy the Amalekites. He wanted him to go and utterly destroy them, all the men, women, children. We know that that didn't happen. And so in 1 Samuel 15, 22, Samuel said, "Has the Lord as much delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than to sacrifice, and to heed than the fat of rams. Yes, your sacrifices were meant to worship me, but I told you what to do. And is it more important for these sacrifices or to be obedient to my will?" Verse 23, "For rebellion is the sin of divination, and insubordination is an iniquity and idolatry. Because you've rejected the word of the Lord, he has rejected you from being king." When we don't do what God asks us to do, we do things in the way that we see fit to try to praise and bless and worship him. He's not pleased. Look over at 1 John chapter 2. First John chapter 2, verse 3. "By this we know that we have come to know him if we keep his commandments. The one who says, 'I have come to know him,' and does not keep his commandments is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But whoever keeps his word, in him the love of God has truly been perfected. By this we know that we are in him." If we do not keep his commandments, the truth is not in him. It's to do what God would have us to do, not our own will. That doesn't mean that the person who's worshiping God in the way that they are is any less sincere, any less of a morally good person. There are so many people that we know today who are good, upstanding people who have a love for God. But you can try to talk to them and they'll justify away the way they do what they do. It's not what God would have you to do, and it's what God wants us to do that we should be obedient to. I don't know. We might finish it. So, something else, real quick, and I think that everybody's gotten this before. So, we'll talk about authority for a second. You can also see the generic and specific authority here. God specified something. What did he specify? How to carry it. The Levites were supposed to carry it on poles. Okay. He didn't say not in a cart. He didn't say not on motorized transportation. He didn't say horseback or with the tribe of Judah or something like that. He specified how it was to be done. All right. So if he specified it and then this happens and God punishes Uzzah for touching the ark because he was judged because he touched the ark, but he wouldn't have ever touched it had been transported the way it was supposed to. So if something is specified, that means we can say, well, because it's not mentioned, I can go do it too. This is an idea of specific authority. This is something has been specified, so we don't deviate from this because it's been specified in this instance. And so doesn't mean we can choose to do it another way because we're not told to do it other ways. The Bible is not a book of do nots. It's a book of how or what to do. You know, I think about David in this sense. You know, he's a man of God. This emotional roller coaster. He thought he was doing what was best, but he got back to what God would have him to do. And this is where I think that 1 Chronicles 13 and 15 really kind of help us to understand this story better than 2 Samuel does. We keep moving on. You know, we mentioned 13 and 15. We did not seek him according to his ordinances and as Moses had commanding according to the word. That's the way they moved it. Now go back to 2 Samuel 6. That's where the rest of these questions are taken from or referring to. So describe David's actions in 13 through 17 of 2 Samuel 6. What is David doing? He sacrifices an ox and a fatling. He is dancing before the Lord with all his might. He along with all the house of Israel is shouting and they're shouting before the God. And then here you have Michal. And so then it happened as the ark of the Lord came into the city of Michal, the daughter of Saul, looked out the window and saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord, and she despised him in her heart. David goes on to tell her. Verse 20, but when David returned to bless his household, Michal, the daughter of Saul, came out to meet David and said, how the king of Israel distinguished himself today. He uncovered himself today in the eyes of his servants, maids as one of the foolish ones shamelessly uncovering himself. So David said to Michal, it was before the Lord who chose me above your father and above all his house to appoint me ruler over the people of the Lord, over Israel. Therefore, I will celebrate before the Lord. I will be more lightly esteemed than this and will be humble in my own eyes. But with the maids of whom you have spoken, with them I will be distinguished. He's not going to be ashamed of what he was doing. He was celebrating God. He was worshiping God. He's not going to be ashamed. She was ashamed. He's acting foolish. Now, David is worshiping God, and I think there's application for us as well. Our worship is our own, and it's for God, so we shouldn't be embarrassed by how we worship. We worship with a cappella singing as opposed to instrumental music. Yeah, we may not be able to carry a tune in the bucket, but it's a sweet-smelling aroma to God because you do it with all your heart. You do it if you're doing it for the right reasons. Praying, our vocabulary, our speech may not be the greatest in the world. That doesn't matter. Simple, basic prayer of love and devotion to your God or praying for help or need or support, there's nothing wrong with that. Reading Scripture, you know, we may not be the greatest reader in the world, but when we're studying God's Word, we shouldn't be ashamed. And so I think that's an important lesson here. It doesn't matter what other people see, other people do. It's a matter of doing and keeping God's statutes, commandments, and ordinances, doing it the right way and doing it for God, not worrying about what other people, what have you do. I'm already over time, but I'll ask this and then we'll put this lesson to bed. Are there any other thoughts, questions, comments? All right, Neil, thank you.